Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Frank Moss, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Passport Affairs at the Department of State. Also joining us in our conversation is Bonnie Glick. Frank, please tell us about the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative. What are the goals of this initiative?
Well, the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative is a requirement implemented by Congress, signed into law by the President as part of the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act last December. The Western Hemisphere Initiative imposes a requirement that American citizens returning to the United States after travel anywhere in the world must present formal documentation to return to the United States. This has been the case for somebody getting off an airplane from London forever. Hasn't been the case for somebody coming back from the Bahamas or Canada. What we're really trying to do here is to make the system more secure by reducing the number of documents that are presented to border inspectors, as well as ending the policy or the practice, I should say, of people making what's called an oral declaration that they're an American citizen. This WHTI has commonly been looked upon as the passport requirement, and in fact, that's something of a misnomer. The passport is clearly one document that meets these needs, but there are others. There are documents issued by the Department of Homeland Security to frequent travelers on the northern and southern border. We're looking at additional documents that we may develop, for example, a passport card, which would facilitate travel across the land borders. The big challenge we have here, of course, is it's a tight timeline. This all has to be done by 2008. We've just published recently and are soliciting public comment under an advance notice for proposed rulemaking about this program. We have additional rulemaking to go through. And, of course, this is driving up the demand for passport services. Bottom line is we have a real challenge ahead of us, one we think we're prepared to deal with. But still, it's going to be a tough couple of years.
How will the requirements of this new travel initiative impact travel and industry and business at the land borders?
There's just no question it will impact the way people move across the borders. But we think that there are both positives and negatives to that. Let me talk about that for a moment. Clearly, by giving border inspectors a consistent set of documents to examine, documents that they have confidence in the underlying integrity of the process, we think that will facilitate movement of people. I should note, for example, that people say, well, why don't you just let people present their birth certificates to the border inspector? Albert, I don't know about you or Bonnie, you, but I know I would be very confused at trying to keep straight the 20,000 or so valid types of birth certificates that are in circulation in the United States any given time. So what we're trying to say here is let's have a smaller number of documents, highly secure, well adjudicated, and we'll use those. There will be some additional costs to private persons, corporations, state governments, what have you. We're working to try and reduce those costs as far as possible. But we think we have here a system where we're both trying to improve security but also facilitate the movement of persons. We think we can do both at the same time.
You talked about the advance notice of proposed rulemaking. Can you tell us about that and how you use these public inputs to reach the initiative's goals?
Sure, Bonnie. The first point I would say is we're sitting here in Washington, D.C., and I don't believe we have all the answers to something as complicated as the Western Hemisphere proposal sitting here while we sit here in Washington. We recognize, for example, that there are communities where literally the churches are on one side of the border and the Walmart is on the other side, or the hospital is on one side and some of the doctors are on the other side. So we recognize that the border is a dynamic process, especially in terms of areas like southern Texas, northern Maine, places like this. So what we're trying to come up with here is a solution where we're soliciting information from the public about our advance notice through our advance notice of proposed rulemaking process. And by the way, when I talk about the public, I mean private citizens, state governments, local governments, corporations, what have you. You can all write to us. We want those comments. And we'll take that information and help to refine our proposal and then go through a more standard rulemaking process, proposed rule, public comment period, and then a final rule over the next year or so. Again, we have a lot of work to do in the rulemaking process, but we really see this rulemaking process as a way to make the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative work as efficiently and effectively as possible and help give us information we really need to refine our final rules.
That's great. I understand, too, that you're working closely with the Department of Homeland Security in consultation with the Secretary of State. And I'm wondering, how are DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, and the State Department working together to maximize the efficiency to carry out the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative?
Well, what I'd like to say is I think that we're basically almost hooked at the hip on this process. We understand that both of us have to work together to make this a success. We meet on a weekly basis, if not more frequently, to discuss this. Public affairs and outreach strategies are joint products. The advance notice of proposed rulemaking is, in fact, a joint process. What we're trying to do is to build on each other's strengths. Everyone seems to recognize that the State Department has experience in adjudicating nationality and identity for huge numbers of people through our passport process, and that that's probably one of the bedrock documents. We also recognize that this has to be hooked into Department of Homeland Security initiatives, such as their registered traveler programs. So what we're trying to come up with is a process that builds on both of our strengths, and especially DHS's presence along the land borders, to come up with a process that really works for the American people and really can promise not just another bureaucratic encumbrance to their movement, but one we think that once people become used to it, they will actually see it is a more secure and really a more facilitated movement across the border than they've experienced heretofore.
The State Department and Homeland Security is a very important partnership. What other partnerships are in place or are under consideration that, again, will help you to support the Western Hemisphere Initiative?
Well, I think there are a variety. One is we're certainly talking extensively to the travel industry. We have met with the airlines and the cruise line industry in the past, and as well as the travel agents, will continue to do that in the future. We also want to talk to the state and local governments, and we need their help to get this message out. And in fact, in the future, we may even see, as the Real ID bill comes into effect, perhaps some additional opportunities for cooperation with the state and local governments on the driver's licenses side. We also have to work clearly with members of Congress. Congress has enacted the law, but Congress also has to recognizing the concerns of their constituents. So we have a regular dialogue. I have colleagues at DHS, colleagues at state. We've all made visits out around the country to try and talk about this program. And then lastly, we have to depend upon the work of other federal agencies, because at the end of the day, just as we depend upon information from federal agencies to help us identify potentially malified passport applicants, we'll have to look at that same type of data sharing activities to help ensure the integrity of this process. And then lastly, we have to talk to Canada and Mexico, as well as the governments in the Caribbean, because they are being directly affected by this. We're explaining it to them. I think they understand it. They're certainly happier, the governments in the Caribbean in particular, over the two-phase program we're now proposing, as opposed to the original one that would have started to go into effect at the end of this year. But the bottom line is, this is not an effort that can be implemented simply by the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of State. We have to have partners in Congress, in the state and local governments, and really in the private sector to make this work.
Frank, I'm still processing the phenomenal growth in passport applications that you mentioned earlier. How will your office handle this increasing demand?
With difficulty. I think there's no question about that. We're fairly process-oriented in passport services, and as I said before, we bring some aspects of the private sector to the process. So what we've looked at in terms of ways to handle this increase in demand, one, we may have some additional facilities. We're just about to open an office in Denver, Colorado, which will help in a small way. More importantly, we continue to build this network of acceptance agents that I talked about earlier. But perhaps most importantly is we're trying to make the greatest return possible on the investment we already have in physical facilities and equipment. So, for example, a year ago, only one of our passport agencies worked two shifts a day. Soon, three of the agencies will be working 16-hour-a-day operations. We work extensive overtime. We will do that. We've also received tremendous support from the Department of State as well as the Office of Management Budget in approving new hiring authorities for the Department of State. We're in the midst of hiring the largest number of additional passport personnel, in the history of passport services. It's 105 right now. There will be more hiring like that in 2006 and 2007, we expect. So we need more people. We need perhaps more facilities. We need to make better use of our existing facilities. And then the last thing we have is something of an innovative idea, which is as we continue to look at our business process, we recognize that there are different ways to do things. So we're looking at this passport card I talked about before, a well-adjudicated, highly secured card, but one that I think is perhaps a better answer for people who cross the border frequently. And last, we're looking at outsourcing to the private sector additional areas of our passport process. Now, no, we're not outsourcing determinations of citizenship, but we are seeking proposals from the private sector on running what we call a passport production center, which will give us the opportunity to perhaps have a dedicated facility working 24/7 producing passports after they have been adjudicated by Department of State employees and through an elaborate data transfer process, moving the workload there so that this private sector facility can help us get the production capacity we need to meet the WHTI requirements over the next few years.
So process improvement and innovation never ceases at the passport services.
I'd like to hope not. I suspect some people would criticize this and say we're not going fast enough or we're not doing enough. I really think we've made tremendous strides in both the integrity of our process and our capacity and really in the quality of customer service we provide. We're kind of proud of the fact that, for example, when the University of Michigan does its annual surveys of customer service standards around the United States, Passport Services is often one of the test populations in the government, and we not only exceed government standards, but we also exceed private sector, the average private sector scores for customer service, and we're pretty proud of that.
That's fantastic. What does the future hold for the State Department? We will ask Deputy Assistant Secretary Frank Moss to explain this to us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.